This podcast is brought to you by the Association for Child and Adolescent Mental Health, ACAM for short. You can find more podcasts and other resources on our website, www.acamh.org, and follow us on social media by searching ACAMH.
Hello, I'm Jo Carlo, a freelance journalist with a specialism in psychology. Welcome to the latest instalment of Autism, a Parent's Guide with Dr. Anne Ozavadjian, Principal Clinical Psychologist at Evelina London Children's Hospital, Guy's and St. Thomas's NHS Foundation Trust. This podcast series focuses on autism spectrum disorder and is designed to help families and carers. It is produced by the mental health charity, the Association for Child and Adolescent Mental Health, ACAM for short, in partnership with Clinical Partners. For more information about ACAM, visit www.acam.org. The focus of today's discussion centres around how to recognise mental health issues in children with ASD. We will be discussing autism and anxiety, why mental health issues often go untreated in those with ASD, and if depression presents differently in those with ASD. Anne's clinical and research interests include assessment and treatment of mental health difficulties in autism spectrum disorder. Anne, welcome. Can you start by introducing yourself?
Yes, I'm a clinical psychologist specialising in autism and neurodevelopmental conditions. And both before and after my clinical training, I worked in specialist services for children and young people with neurodevelopmental conditions at both Guy's and St. Thomas's hospitals and the Maudsley Hospital, both in London. I still do lots of work for the NHS, both in terms of training and teaching, and also some clinical work as well. Teaching and training I do is often in collaboration with ACAM.
Great, thank you. Autism and anxiety often seem to go hand in hand. Can you explain the difference, but also the overlap between autism and anxiety?
Yes, so autism is a social communication difficulty, of course, and anxiety disorders are a mental health difficulty. And autism is a developmental condition, arguably a lifelong condition, whereas anxiety is not by any means. It waxes and wanes, and not everyone with autism has anxiety, although many people do experience high levels of anxiety a lot of the time. Anxiety is a normal part of life, of course, but people with autism seem to experience much higher levels of anxiety for much more of the time than individuals without autism. But of course, this doesn't apply to everybody, which is one of the reasons why it's really important to recognise that anxiety is in fact a separate and treatable condition and not just part of autism. Typical markers for anxiety include symptoms of stress, such as an increased heart rate or sweating or agitated sort of behaviour. Other behavioural markers might include avoidance as well. And then there may be some anxiety-related cognitions, such as anticipatory worry. So, for example, what's going to happen tomorrow, or indeed worry about what's already happened. So, why did I say this to that person in that way? You know, sort of rumination about certain things, which can cause anxiety about future interactions. Some differences between anxiety and autism and the general population include very specific worries around change and routine. That does seem to be very particular to people with autism, and also very high levels of social anxiety, which are not necessarily driven by the typical fears, which are often called fears of negative evaluation. That means basically worrying about what people are going to think about you, that they're going to think about you negatively, think you're silly or whatever. But in autism, it can be those sorts of thoughts, but it also can be much more about not knowing what to say in social situations, not knowing what other people are thinking, just general social confusion, which can lead to anxiety. And another difference in the way anxiety may present in people with autism may be that they may show rather than tell people that they're anxious. Myself and some colleagues ran some focus groups where we asked this question, which is how does anxiety present differently? We asked parents, and that was a very common comment, was that they don't actually tell me that they're anxious, but I can tell. They show it through, for example, social withdrawal or aggressive behaviour or twitchy behaviour. And then some people are actually very good at hiding anxiety for fear of standing out. And this means that it can be very difficult to identify, especially at school. So it's really not uncommon for schools to say, well, we really don't see anxiety at school. Mm. And then one needs to be thinking about why it presents so differently in different settings.
What other mental health problems are typically associated with ASD?
So much more attention now is being paid to depression and suicide or suicidal behaviours, with a recognition that depression may occur at equally high rates as anxiety, in fact. It's a very limited amount of evidence, but it's quite all pointing to the same conclusion, really. And in my experience, many people with autism become depressed from living with such high levels of anxiety, actually. Right. So the two kind of can go hand in hand.
Right. So they feed into each other.
Absolutely. And it's something, there's something about not necessarily treating depression, but treating anxiety, which can help lift mood. Other sorts of mental health difficulties might include emotion regulation difficulties, so problems with anger management as well. And this can be very impairing, affecting relationships, access to education, access to the workplace, etc. So it's really important to address some of these difficulties. Obsessive compulsive disorder is quite common in people with autism. And increasingly, eating disorders are being recognised in people with autism as well. So again, these may present quite differently. And there may be less of a focus on body shape or image, and possibly more of a focus on obsessive calorie counting or maybe food sensitivities or food aversions, which become very rigid and extreme. Or maybe having a special interest in like healthy eating or something like that, which just becomes quite extreme.
And does depression present differently in children with ASD?
We have much less data available to us, actually, than we do in terms of anxiety. But there is some thinking that autism may present differently, a bit like anxiety, in that it may there may be an increase in aggression, withdrawal, a decrease in self-behaviours, maybe an increase in stereotype behaviours. But also some studies have looked at some of the assumptions that were made. So for example, people thought maybe people with autism won't experience so much of the more abstract aspects of depression, such as a sense of worthlessness or guilt or that sort of thing. But one study looked at these things, and people with autism on questionnaires actually endorsed those sorts of abstract ideas as much, if not more, than people without autism. So again, I think that really highlights how we just really need to not make assumptions and actually, you know, look at things by case-by-case basis when we're doing a detailed formulation. So I think depression actually can present quite typically with, you know, feelings of low mood, feelings of hopelessness about oneself, the world, the future. In those sorts of aspects, CBT can be quite helpful in terms of helping people modify unhelpful thinking styles. I think that's really the only case when CBT is helpful, though. If somebody is depressed for very good reasons because of circumstances, then really we need to be helping them with those circumstances.
How can a parent or carer recognise mental health issues in their autistic child? I would imagine it's sometimes hard to differentiate between mental distress that might need separate treatment and ASD symptoms.
I think that's absolutely true. But I think parents are very expert, and many parents that I've worked with have described how they realised in hindsight what looked like naughty behaviour was in fact anxiety driven. So, and again, the diagnosis can be instrumental in changing people's understanding, people's perspective, not just parents, but professionals around the child as well. And parents described how once they knew that, it was easier to see why the child was acting in a certain way and then address the underlying reasons. Other ways to recognise mental health difficulties are if you see an increase in avoidance or an increase in, for example, unhelpful behaviour such as not engaging in self-care as much as before or something like that. One parent described how their child shut themselves in the toilet all day long at school. You know, that's a form of avoidance and escape in a sense from the things which are causing anxiety. Anxiety can also be confused with ADHD, attention deficit and hyperactivity disorder as well. So for example, children who are pacing around, irritating other children, it may be because of anxiety, not because of increased, well, you may see increased hyperactivity, but that may be driven by anxiety. And it can be so difficult for young people to put their feelings into words. And so many parents describe the detective process, which is needed in order to understand, for example, what's making them pace, rather than just saying, you're driving me mad.
Right. And should the parent actually be asking the child, what's making you pace, or
If they think their child is able to answer that question, right, then yes. Mm. But sometimes it's important to do, like I say, the detective process. Sometimes, you know, professionally I'll do with parents what's called a functional assessment, which is an ABC approach. So when you see a change in behaviour, what was happening just before the behaviour, what was happening in the environment, who was there, then how to describe the behaviour, and then consequence, how did it end?
Mm.
How did it resolve itself? I think parents are actually, as I say, really good at differentiating mental distress from autism. So when we were running our focus groups, asking parents about the presentation of anxiety in their children, all the way through we asked, you're definitely talking about anxiety here and not autism. Mm. And parents were very, very clear that they were. And they were also very clear that the impact of anxiety is often much greater than the autism itself. They would say, you know, we can manage the autism, but it's the anxiety that's really challenging and it makes life hard. But getting to the root causes of anxiety can be difficult because of the communication limitations. So even very verbally able children with autism may have difficulty communicating their feelings, and that may get even worse at times of heightened anxiety as well. So
at what stage should a parent or carer be seeking additional support for their child to help treat mental health problems?
As early as possible, really, and I don't think there's much controversy here. So generally speaking, the less entrenched a problem is, the easier it is to treat. Not always. But I've worked also with some very seemingly entrenched, intractable problems which have shifted with the right understanding, the right knowledge, or in fact the right intervention, which, as I say, might not be therapy. It might be about changing the environment or changing something in the environment. So for one young person I met who was on the verge of coming out of school, I remember that when we looked at his timetable, there was one particular lesson that was particularly difficult for him. The school agreed to drop that, and actually in dropping that, not only did he have that particular stressor removed, but he also had a bit of spare time, just to give him a bit of downtime in the timetable, and that made all the difference for this particular person. So again, there's a real need to balance here, supporting your child with their anxiety, but also supporting resilience as well. Mm. So we don't want to be adapting the environment so much so that a child doesn't learn how to cope with anxiety at all, ever.
Yeah, well, it's a really tricky balance.
It's a tricky balance, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And sometimes you do need to, if a child is really so unwell or in so much distress, you do need to take away all stressors, but gradually build them back in again.
Anne, I'm aware that despite a high prevalence of mental health problems in children and young people with ASD, these often do go untreated. So how does one go about getting the necessary recognition and the right support? Let's say you've done the detective work, you know there's an issue.
Mm-hmm.
How do you get the support you need?
Unfortunately, this is an area which still needs a huge amount of work, really, I think nationwide, because so many parents are saying the same thing, which is it's just incredibly difficult to access the right mental health. It's difficult enough to access mental health support, but accessing the right mental health support is challenging. And sometimes services will say, well, it's autism, we're a mental health service. And then if you go back to autism specialist services, they say it's a mental health problem. And sometimes that means that diagnostic overshadowing is taking place, in that there's an assumption that because someone has autism, therefore they're bound to be anxious. And this is actually both in NHS and private settings as well. So NHS services may say we're not commissioned to treat autism. Private insurers may say it's a condition related to autism, we don't cover autism. Wow. And I would say this is so wrong, because, you know, you wouldn't say because you have autism, I'm not going to treat your renal condition or your eyesight problem or what have you. So research has demonstrated what we already knew, in fact, as clinicians, which is that anxiety is a separate, treatable condition. And it's just not fair to deny people that treatment because they have autism.
So how do you change attitudes amongst, well, professionals and commissioners of services?
Yeah, well, we just keep bashing away, in a sense. But as I say, I provide a lot of teaching and training. And, you know, most individual practitioners are well aware of that. But there's something about lobbying, I suppose, at both a government level and also at a local level as well, to make sure that young people with autism are getting the treatment which they need. When people have had the right treatment, and, you know, this could be via CAMHS or via specialist CAMHS, you know, they've all said what made the difference was having someone who really understood autism, which is very important.
And given what we've covered, what are the key issues here for parents?
Some issues, from talking to the parents that I've worked with over the years, many parents have said that sometimes your world may become about autism. And some parents really talked about how you need to keep a little bit of you for you, in a sense. One parent described just sitting in a car park reading a newspaper just to have some time out. And she said she almost felt guilty about that, whereas I would say I think those sorts of things are really important. Other people describe switching off social media just so that they didn't see what everybody else's life was like. You know, it's doing whatever you need to do, really, to look after yourself. And it is really important to look after yourself as well. There is something about thinking ahead, but thinking ahead in a positive way. As I said in one of the other podcasts, it's important not to make too many long-term predictions, or at least not too many negative ones, because we really don't know what trajectory somebody's life is going to go in, what direction. And again, I'm not saying parenting someone with autism is a bed of roses. It's not that, but it is about getting the right support, or for example, getting education right as well. It can be life transforming. So parents do need to be very proactive in terms of accessing the right support, in terms of helping your child understand and accept their condition, and just about finding their place in the world, really. All these things are really crucial to positive outcomes. You know, I've worked with parents who were told that your child probably will never speak or they'll never have a job, and actually sometimes children's trajectories can really defy all predictions, so it's important not to make too many.
For those listening to this podcast, where can they go for more information or to find helpful resources on the issues that we've talked about today?
I think the National Autistic Society, Autistica, Autism Speaks and ACAM, they all have websites with lots and lots of useful information, lots of signposting to local services, etc. Also about mental health and how it presents in autism. And also in terms of support with anxiety, Professor Simonoff and myself and some other researchers developed an app, I think I mentioned it on one of the other podcasts as well, called Molehill Mountain, that unlocks daily tips, CBT tips and techniques in terms of managing anxiety, which some people might find helpful.
And is that downloadable on?
It is downloadable, freely downloadable, yeah, absolutely.
For other episodes in the series Autism, A Parent's Guide, please visit www.acam.org and follow ACAM on Twitter at ACAM or search on your podcast provider. Once again, our thanks go to Clinical Partners for supporting this Autism podcast series. With the UK's largest network of senior mental health and autism professionals, Clinical Partners can help ensure your child is fast-tracked to the right diagnosis and optimised treatment plan. For further information and advice for families and carers, search for Clinical Partners Autism or visit www.clinical-partners.co.uk.
This podcast was brought to you by the Association for Child and Adolescent Mental Health, ACAM for short.